Begin the current daf, Masechtas Makis, daf Gimel. Begin on the second line down for the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues in the discussion that would relate back to the halacha of our previous daf, where we opened up the Masechta. We spoke about two halachas in our opening Mishnah, that Edom Zayman are not going to get the general halacha of Kasher Zaman, which generally when they are refuted in a specific way, that how could you say that testimony when you were with us in a different place? They get exactly what they attempted to do to the defendant. Our Mishnah spoke about two cases that they don't get the same thing. They don't go into Gullus. They do not become B'nai Gerushim B'nai Chalutza. Then the Gemara quoted a Braisa to add on another two halachas that they don't give Kefer for when they attempted to say that the defendant's Shar Hamuid killed a person, and when they said that he stole and that he was going to have to be sold as an Eved Ivri, they do not get those same punishments. And a fifth one, which Rabbi Kiva had added on, he says that if, let's say, the Edom Zayman, after it's found out that they were Huzim, they quickly flee to another court and they admit themselves before they're prosecuted in the first court, they're going to be exempt. And that the Gemara explained because Rabbi Kiva holds that Edom Zayman is a Knas and a person does not pay a Knas by himself. Now, it's regarding that halacha of Rabbi Kiva, the Gemara introduces this related teaching of Amar Rehuda Marav. It says, Eid Zayman, Mishalm Lafi Chalka, a witness that was found out that he was lying, specifically through the context of Hazama, he has to pay according to his portion. So the Gemara says, "My Mishalm Lafi Chalka," what does Rav mean when he says that the Eid Zayman has to pay according to his portion? If you would think to say, which would be the most simple translation, that there's two witnesses for every pair of witnesses, and it's found out that they were lying, and they wanted to make this guy pay $100, so now they have to give back to the defendant what they were trying to make him lose, which was $100, so he pays 50 and he pays 50. And that the Gemara asks if that's what Rav is teaching. But Tanina, this is a Mishnah later on, Daf Hamad Aleph. The Mishnah teaches, Mishalshin B'mamun. If let's say, the witnesses that tried prosecuting this defendant were three or four witnesses. So halacha is that the court becomes a shlish. A shlish is a third party that then goes and says, okay, each person has to go ahead and pay accordingly to make the sum total of how much that they wanted to prosecute this defendant. Or the word mishalshin doesn't mean like a third party, that's what the court does to make sure everyone gives their portion, but rather it's just a terminology in the sense of, let's say there's three witnesses, so then you have to divide up that payment amongst all three. But let's say if there would be four witnesses, then it would be the same thing, would be merabin. You would have to make in quarters. But the point is that when it's a monetary payment that they tried making him liable for, which they were lying about, they each have to give their portion. Whereas, as we'll see later on, Daf Hey, the Emeshalshim of Malkus, regarding Malkus, you don't say that if they were trying to prosecute him for lashes, let's say three witnesses, that each one gets 13. That's not the case. Each one gets lashes. But one thing is that Rav cannot be teaching that each witness pays according to his portion, because that's a Mishnah on Daf Hey. Ella, rather, what are you going to say? Rav's talking about not when the whole pair of witnesses becomes Huzam. He's saying when only one of the two witnesses are Huzam, meaning they go to one of the witnesses and say, how could you say that you with us in that place? That is what Rav's teaching, the Mishalim Palgadi Day, that he only pays his half, even though the whole pair of witnesses is not. Yeah, when all of them get, so that the Mishnah later on teaches Mishalshin. Rav is teaching that even if one of the witnesses get Huzam, he pays his portion. And that the Gemara says, Umi Mishalim, could you even say that's what Rav is saying? Does that one witness pay his portion of Hazama? But Ratanya will it in the Braisa. It says, Ein Eid Zaymim Mishalim Mamin Achizu Mishnehem. The Eid Zaymim does not pay monetary, the penalty of Hazama, until both witnesses are Huzim. You do not create a Hazama situation and being Mazim one of the witnesses, you have to do it to both. So that neither could be what Rav was saying in his halacha of Misham Lafi Chalka. So Rav says, what Rav was teaching was, Ba'imer, Eidu Sheker Adati. It's when one of the two witnesses says that I said false testimony. Now, there's a discussion in the Rishayim, Rashi, Tesis, the Bach over here, regarding what is the exact case. But we'll say in the simple way is when he admits, says I was lying. Not that someone else was Mazam. And you're right, for Hazama, then you have to have both of the witnesses are Huzam. He comes forth and he says, I was lying. And therefore, he has to go ahead and pay his portion. And that the Gemara asks, Kol Kimine? Does he even have that ability to do that? Do you think he could retract and say, I was lying, and thereby, yeah, have to pay his half, what he was trying to make him liable for, but moreover is to exempt the defendant from having to pay what they were originally trying to prosecute him for? But he's not even believed. Kivin Shehigat Halacha tells us regarding the laws of testimony of witnesses that says that Kivin Shehigat, once he says his testimony in court, Shuvein Chayzer Magid, Halacha is that he's not allowed to go ahead and say another testimony that will retract his original testimony. So he cannot then exonerate the defendant. And moreover, that cannot be a liability for him, which is undoing that, that now he's liable. You wouldn't be able to say that as an interpretation. So Ella rather says the Gemara, it's Ba'imer, it's talking about where this one of the two witnesses says, he adnu, we testified, meaning me and my partner, where his partner does not agree to what he's saying, but one of the two is admitting that we testified, v'huzamnu bebezn plaini, and we were huzam in a different court. So it's regarding that admission where he's saying that we already huzam. So there was $100 that we tried prosecuting him, half is my 50, I'm coming to pay up in court. That's what Rabbi Rav is teaching, that he has to pay according to his portion. Says the Gemara, and this is why the Gemara brought in this halacha, Kaman, then who's the teaching of Rav going like? Delay Rabbi Akiva, not like Rabbi Akiva, which we had left off in the bottom of the previous daf. Dik Rabbi Akiva, because if it's like Rabbi Akiva, Ha'amar, he said, which was the fifth teaching in that brisa, Af Eina Mishama Piatzmai. Eid Zaymim does not pay based on his own admission, where if he comes and he says, yeah, they found out, there was witnesses that came and says, how could you say you're with us? And we quickly ran away, we came to you, we admitted. So then regarding that admission, Rabbi Akiva says he doesn't pay. He's exempt. So obviously Rav's teaching would be not like Rabbi Akiva. And rather says, come on, no, we could even explain Rav's halacha even like Rabbi Akiva. Ba'imar, it's where that one witness says, he adnu, we had testified in a different court, v'huzamnu bebezn plaini, and we were huzam, meaning that another pair of witnesses came and said, how could we have said that we were someone else, we were somewhere else when we had claimed we were there. But more than that, there was one more step. The chiyavnu mamain, and we had been already prosecuted and been liable to pay money in that court that we were huzam, meaning that the defendant actually then sued us in court after we tried prosecuting him. He then went and prosecuted us, and the court found us guilty. Now, from that moment on, when the court already prosecuted, not that they were just huzam. Huzam is when the witnesses say, hey, you guys are lying. It's but when then the guy countersues and says, hey, you guys were lying, and then he wants to sue them for the hazama, and the court finds them guilty, then the halacha, even according to Bekiva of Eid Muzayman, is not a kanas anymore. It becomes a monetary obligation. Now, regarding admitting that, that's not considered marshias, atzmoy, making yourself guilty. It's already hershiu elikim. The court has already made him found him guilty. And therefore, even Rabbi Akiva would agree to that halacha, that admitting that is not admitting a kanas. Knas is only when there's no obligation. Here there's already a monetary liability for that what was originally a knas, but once the court already prosecutes, already finds him guilty, then it's a monetary obligation. So on that says the Gemara, so good that, I mean, I would have thought to say, since regarding his fellow witness, he's not believed regarding his friend, he cannot make him liable for admitting that he's saying that we were found liable for being Eid Mizayman in another court. So therefore, I would have thought to say that, so this guy himself also would not be liable. Because it's one pair of testimony that was huzam. And if it's not believed regarding his friend, then that would not be a complete hazama, and therefore maybe he shouldn't be even believed regarding himself. That's the chiddush of the halacha of Rav, which again, the Gemara has explained, could even be like Rabbi Akiva, that since it's a monetary obligation, it was already mechuyiv, and he's coming to admit his part, that is something that he could be mesham lafi chelka, he pays his portion, and that would be a liability that he would have to pay, even though he's not believed regarding his friend, and his friend is denying that, and his friend is not paying the half, but it's already a chiv that became into mamanis, and therefore he could be mesham apiyatzmai. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of our opening Mishnah of this Masechta, which was talking about an exception to the rule of Kasha Zamam. So our Mishnah also discusses a unique case where you can't do a straight-up Kasha Zamam. I mean, generally you say that, oh, this guy is Chayv Misa Skila, so the witnesses, when they're Huzam, they get Skila. He's liable for $100, turns out they were lying, they have to pay the $100. But the Mishnah says, let's say Me'idin Anu Es Ish Plaini, they say, we testify regarding that man, Shigirish Es Ishtai, that in front of us, we saw on that day that he divorced his wife. Now he's saying, the man's saying, I never divorced my wife, and therefore, since I didn't divorce her, I don't owe her ksuba payment. When a man divorces his wife, he has to give her the ksuba. Let's say in the ksuba it's written the 200 primary, which is for the psula, and then he has to have, let's say, 500 for Karen Tzaren Barzel, whatever it is, there's certain amounts of money written in the ksuba, which he has to give when he divorces her. They say he divorced, and therefore he's chayv, and he says, no, I didn't divorce. And moreover, say the witnesses, not only that he divorced her, he did not yet give her ksuba. And then it turns out that the witnesses were huzam, where other witnesses came and said, how can you say you saw him divorce his wife on that day in that place when you were with us somewhere else? So that's what the Mishnah is discussing. Now that the witnesses were huzim, what should they pay? If you're going to say that they should pay the entire ksuba because they were trying to make him lose 1,000 zuz, let's say. 1,000 zuz was what it said in the ksuba, and they're saying, yeah, you have to pay it to your wife. Turns out they were lying. So now what they want to make him liable for, they should be liable for. And that says the Mishnah, but you can't say that. Bahaloi, because maybe this husband is going to die or divorce his wife. Bein hayoyim ubein lamachar. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow. We don't know. Maybe he's going to die today. Maybe he's going to divorce today or tomorrow. Soife litin la ksuba. So ultimately, he might have ended up giving her her ksuba. So it turns out maybe they weren't really causing him a loss at all. Because maybe later today, tomorrow, the week after, he would divorce or he would drop dead. And if he would die, he would be giving her the ksuba. So then what loss did they cause him? So rather, says the Mishnah, Oimdin kama odom reitza litin b'ksupa sosholzu. We evaluate how much money would another person be willing to pay for this ksuba out of doubt. She'im nisalman lo oynis garisha, that if this woman would get widowed or get divorced, then the consumer, instead of the woman getting, would get that ksuba. On v'imesa, but on the other hand, if let's say the woman would die, yirshena bala, then actually the husband would inherit the wife. And when she dies, he gets the ksuba. And then the one who paid for the money, the one who paid for the ksuba would actually lose. It would be a risk factor. He would lose that investment. He wouldn't get the ksuba because it's not going to the woman. Now, the Gemara is actually going to explain what exactly is the obligation for the Edom Zayman that the Tana of the Mishnah is saying that they have to give to the husband that they were trying to cause him a loss by saying that he is chayv to give a ksuba to his wife. As the Gemara explains, Kitzad Shaman, how do we evaluate, in other words, what exactly are we being mechayiv this Edom Zayman to give to the husband? Because we could explain the halacha of our Mishnah two different ways. How so? The husband and the wife both have different doubtful merits in this ksuba. She's anticipating that if he's going to die or if he's going to divorce her, she's going to get the whole ksuba. Because when he divorces her or when he dies, she gets that whole ksuba. Now, he's anticipating that if she dies when he's still alive, he actually, halacha is, he inherits her, and then he gets the whole ksuba. Now, moreover, the strength of his merits in the ksuba is stronger than hers for two reasons. One is because he actually eats all the produce of the karka, which are distinct for this ksuba, let's say the nechsitz are in Barzel, he eats those peiros and the nechsim look, and not her. So that's one thing. She doesn't have anything to write in the ksuba until he passes away, until he divorces her. Whereas he, all those assets written in the ksuba, he gets to use them the whole time when before anyone passes away, before any divorce happens. Moreover, a second reason why his strength is stronger is because he has a chazaka. He's holding on to them right now, whereas she is lacking collection, which many times that could be a challenge going through the courts. The one who has to collect has to prove it beyond, has to mitzvah mechavera, all of a raya. So that's two strengths that he has in the ksuba, which give him a higher ratio percentage of value in the ksuba more than what she has. So therefore, the difference would be when if they would be coming to sell the ksuba to someone else. Let's say she would sell her rights in the ksuba, her doubtful collection, and he would sell his doubtful one. His actually would be sold for a higher value than hers because there's more value that he has in the ksuba, both for the situation of doubt and for the current status right now where he gets to use it, more than her value. Now, the terminology of the Mishnah sounds like, if we read it as we read the Mishnah, that we evaluate the merit of her doubtful ability to collect the ksuba because it says, kama adam reitz litin, how much would a person be willing to give? She'im nisarmala, that if she gets widowed, which is, meaning that he dies, then she's widowed, how much would they be willing to pay? Meaning that they would then collect it, meaning that she would get it and they would take it from her. Now the problem is, we cannot say that that's the interpretation of the Mishnah, that that's the amount of money that the Zayim are going to give. Because it's not the merit of her doubt in the ksuba that they were coming to cause a loss for the husband. Rather, it was the merit of his doubt of how much value he has in the ksuba that they were trying to make him liable to pay for that right away, meaning that he was going to lose whatever value he has in the ksuba by having to give it to right away. So then, therefore, what's the interpretation of our Mishnah? So we could say that what the Mishnah is saying is as follows. We evaluate her merit, how much value she has in the ksuba, meaning how much would a person be willing to pay for the benefit of getting her rights to the ksuba, and it's that amount that they do not pay. And it's the rest of the value that they do pay. The reason for that is because it's the rest of that that they were trying to cause a loss to the husband with their testimony. But the value of how much rights and stakes she has in the ksuba, they weren't going to cause a loss to him. Why? Because now, even now when they are huzam, if let's say the wife would be willing to sell her ksuba, the husband would give her willingly that amount of value in the ksuba that she has, and they're not causing a loss to him. So for example, if let's say the ksuba is 1,000 zuz, and since we said his value is greater than her value, his value let's say would be worth 500, because it's still a doubt. Maybe he would die first, and then he would never get it. So people would be willing to give $500 on the 1,000. Hers is worth less, as we described. They would be willing to give 400. According to this first interpretation, that her value that she has in the ksuba, which is 400 zuz, that's how much they do not give to the husband, meaning they're going to give him 600. Why? Because they would be causing him a loss, not of 1,000, although he would have to give a ksuba of 1,000 right now, but 400 of it he would willingly give right now for her value, which is to give her that payment of the ksuba. So that they're not causing a loss, because he would be willing to pay that anyway, that he doesn't have to deal with her anymore, which is like the amount of paying off her ksuba. So that 400 you diminish from the 1,000, that would be 600. That would be the first interpretation of how much they have to pay the husband for the attempted loss. Or a second interpretation is maybe that they have to pay him the amount of merit that he has out of doubt in the ksuba. And that's what the Mishnah is saying that we evaluate. It's that amount of money that the witnesses have to give him. And that is, we do not obligate the Edom Zayman to give so much like the first option had, that they have to pay him the whole ksuba except for how much Teva Sana she has in the ksuba. Because maybe, actually, that they're not causing him such a loss of 600 zuz, as we described before in their testimony. Because even now, when they're Zayman, maybe the husband will die tomorrow and she will collect everything. And maybe she would not be willing to sell her share of the ksuba to her husband. But his taivas, how much benefit he had that he could sell it right now. He could have sold the ksuba right now, even if he would die tonight, but he could sell it right now to someone else and he would be able to get 500. It's that amount that they're causing him a loss, because if they were not huzam, he would have had paid it right away. So now when they're huzam, so that's how much he has the merit as he has in the beginning. And therefore, when the Mishnah says, according to this interpretation, that she'imnes armala, that sounds like we're talking about her, but now the second interpretation is saying how much his tevis, and that would be how much he would be able to sell right now. So on that, what the Mishnah means to say is that we evaluate how much would a person be willing to pay regarding this ksuba, which is in doubt. What's the doubt? There's two doubts, as the Mishnah really describes both of them. If she would become an almana, that meaning he would die, she would collect. But then the Mishnah concludes and says, but if she would die, then he would inherit. And the court then goes ahead and evaluates the amount of how much value he has out of doubt in the ksuba, which is 500 zuz, according to the case that we described, and that's how much they have to give him. So therefore, that's the Gemara's question of how do we evaluate. Again, you can't say it the way the simple translation of the Mishnah is, because when the way it sounds like the Mishnah's wording is how much she would be losing, meaning how much would she be able to sell it for, but that has nothing to do with her. It's about how much they wanted to make him lose. So on that, the Gemara asks, as we described, there's two different options, how are we evaluating? On that, the Gemara says, "Machlekes amayram." Rav Chizda Babal. Rav Chizda says that we evaluate how much money does he have on the ksuba right now. How much would a person be willing to give him right now out of doubt that if the husband would ultimately get the ksuba, meaning that the wife would die first, or even right now that he could use it right now, it's that amount that the zaymen have to give to the husband. And Rav Nasim Aishia Aymer, he says, no, Be'isha, yeah, you go ahead and you evaluate how much was the woman's Tavis, and how much could she sell it for right now, which we describe is less than him, which is 400 zuz. It's that amount that they do not pay, and the rest, which is 600 zuz, that's how much they pay to the husband, which again, we said, is a more stringent opinion than Rav Chizda. Again, we said, because they're not making him lose 1,000, they make him lose 600, because the 400 that the wife would have gotten anyway, he would be willing to pay that, which would have anyways gone to the wife, which is what they wanted to give, that the husband should give all 1,000, so 400 he would have given anyway, so they're causing a loss of 600 zuz. Amar Papa, he paskins be'isha. We evaluate the amount of how much the woman's is, and again, that's what you don't give, and you give the rest to the husband, like Reb Nosson. Ubiksubasa, and moreover, only what's written in the ksuba. In other words, they don't pay to the husband what's more than the primary amount of the ksuba, what's written into the ksuba. Meaning, like, Nichsei Tzern Barzel. but they don't pay. How much are we going to cause a loss to the husband to have to give to the wife now that he would allegedly have divorced his wife and have to give her everything back upon the divorce, which includes even Nichsi Melug? Because even though they would be causing a loss of Nichsi Melug, which are different types of properties that he has to give to the wife when there's a divorce, and that they would have caused them a loss if they would have been believed in their testimony that he divorced her, but because he gets to consume those payers when she's still alive and he would inherit it when she dies, that they don't pay because they could say that we were only testifying regarding the ksuba and we didn't know that she has Nichsi Melug. Nichsi Tzar Basel written in the ksuba, which are different types of assets, which is a certain stronger responsibility that he has. Whereas Nichsi Melug, although there is a loss for him, but since it's not written in the ksuba, they could say, well, we didn't know. We only knew what there's a ksuba, and although it would have been collateral damage, but that's not something we could prove that they knew about, and therefore we can't go ahead kashazam on that, and therefore for that, they don't have to pay. So it's regarding evaluating the amount of how much the woman has, and that's how much you detract of how much they have to pay to the husband that wanted to cause a loss. And moreover, only what's written in the ksuba, but not what's not written in the ksuba, even though that would have been a loss for the husband. Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, which is a similar type of a discussion, in the sense of that it's not a clear-cut hazama, and rather we have to evaluate the value of what the loss was attempted to be on the defendant, which what the Edim Zayman have to pay that same amount as a knas. Mishnah says, Me'idin anu be'ish pleini, we testify regarding that man, shu chayv l'chaveri elav zuz. He owes his friend 1,000 zuz. Now, al manas litno loy mekan v'ashleishim yoyim. Let's say he was alone, he owes him 1,000 zuz. Moreover, the 1,000 that he owes him was stipulated that he has to pay it back within 30 days. Now, the defendant says, you're right, I borrowed 1,000, I owe him $1,000, but it's mikan vad eser shanim. But the stipulation was, I get to pay it back in 10 years' time. And then the vuhuzim turned out they were lying, that the loan was not for just 30 days, it was for 10 years. So they were causing, what were they causing a loss? He agrees he has to pay back the $1,000, but it was within 10 years and they were going to try to make it only within 30 days. So we evaluate how much would a person be willing to give, that he could hold on to 1,000 zuz, in the differential of having it only for 30 days. Or from the amount of time they could hold on to it for 10 years. And that difference is what they were trying to cause a loss to him, not the thousands of those, because that anyway he was admitting he has to pay. That difference, people would be willing to pay money to hold on to a loan for that much longer. That's the amount they were trying to make him lose, and that's how much the Ibn Zayman have to pay. Now, halacha that will relate back to the halacha of this Mishnah, the Gemara brings Amar B'Yudah Mishmol. It says, if someone lends his friend money for a period of 10 years, so in those 10 years, you're going to come across the Shemitah year, which is every seventh year. Says Shmuel, Shvi'is Misham Tasei. So the Shemitah year, which cancels all debts, is going to cancel the debt of this loan. As you continue to Talmud Beis, where he explains that the Avagav the Hashta, because even though now, in the Shemitah year, Lo Kerinin Bei, Lo Yigais, we do not pronounce regarding that debt, Lo Yigais, which is the essential element of the Shemitah year, which the Pasuk says that whoever is a creditor regarding his friend, it says, Lo Yigais is Re'eyu, he's not going to go ahead and attempt to collect from his friend, and rather because Shemitah is called out to Hashem. So on that, Shmuel is forewarning that although that if let's say he would come in this Shemitah year right now and come to collect, even without it being the Shemitah, he wouldn't be able to collect, because anyway, the loan's not due until the 10th year. Still, Shmuel is teaching, we don't say that since we don't say Lo Yigis, so therefore we don't pronounce the other element of this halacha, which is that Shamait, that the debt should be cancelled. Says Shmuel, no, because Seif Asil De Yigis. Ultimately, this debt is going to come to not collecting, and that's how we understand the Pasuk. It's saying Lo Yigis, don't attempt to collect. In its time, which is, let's say, at the end of 10 years, Esri Eyo, your friend, because Kikara Shemitah, because Shemitah has already canceled it already beforehand. That's what Shmuel says. So though you don't have Loyigas right now, which is essentially what it means that Shemitah is canceling, you can't collect, but anyways you can't collect. Yeah, but it's telling you don't collect even later on, 3 years from now, because it was already Kikara Shemitah Lashem already now. On this teaching of Shmuel, Masra of Kahana, Rav Kahana asks from the Loch of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, regarding the person who was saying the loan was for 10 years, and the Edom Zayman were claiming it's for 30 days, and they were huzim, so says the Mishnah, so how much does the Edom Zayman have to pay? We evaluate how much a person would be willing to give, that he could hold on to 1,000 zuz, between the amount of, let's say, when he has to pay back within 30 days, ubin litin mekam v'adez sham, and between the amount of time that it takes that he could pay back only in 10 years. As Rav Kahana, v'yamrit shvis mesham tasin, if you say like Rav Chizda, like Shmuel, that Allah is that the Shemitah year cancels the debt within 10 years, because when it reaches the Shemitah year, so kulanami boy shlumele. What do you mean? The Eidim Zemim only have to pay how much a person would be willing to hold on to a debt longer? What do you mean? If it's true, like the borrower that the loan was for 10 years and the debt is going to be entirely canceled, so they want you to make him obligated to pay back 1,000 zuz within 30 days, and he, if he was right, which ultimately he was proven to be right, he actually doesn't have to pay back anything. So why are we saying we only have to give how much a person would be willing to only pay back in 10 years? They should have to pay how much of the entire 1,000 zuz, because they were trying to obligate him for 1,000 zuz, which after the Shemitah he doesn't have to pay at all. So Marava, he says, what are we talking about over here in this, in our Mishnah? It's talking about b'malva ala mashkin. The loan was made on collateral. Or uvamaisish teresav lebezin, or when someone gives over his documents, when the lender gives his documents of collection to the courts, which is essentially the principle that Hill was misakin, where on that document it's written that the person, the lender says, I've given over my collection of this debt from that person in front of these judges in that place, that whatever debts I have, I could collect whenever I want to, which is halacha, the principle. It's not like learning the Mishnah Masechta Shviyos that says, Hamaval Hamashkin, if someone lends money on collateral, meaning he takes from that person something worth that value, or if he gives over his documents to the courts, and there the halacha is that the Shemitah year does not cancel the debt, because there we don't say lo yigais, because he's not collecting anything. Because he already has it, let's say in the case of the Mashkin, he already has it, or the court has that ability, and therefore, that's the halacha of the Mishnah. But yeah, if there was no Mashkin, or if he didn't give over his Torah Lebezin, that is what the halacha was being said by Shmuel, that it cannot be collected after the Shemitah year, even if the loan was for 10 years, it's already going to be Shamut in the Shemitah year. That's one version. Ikud the Amri, some say the opposite. Amri Vidim Shmuel, Hamavas Chaver Lesser Shem, if someone lends his friend money for 10 years, Ein Shvi'is Misham Tasei. The Shemitah year does not cancel that debt. Because V'avagav the Os L'Dei L'Yigas. So even though ultimately you could explain the Pasig that it's telling you, L'Yigas, don't go ahead and try to collect, which will come at some later point in time. But according to this version of Shmuel, Hashtami, L'Kareen B'L'Yigas, but now in the seventh year, you can't say L'Yigas, similar to the Halacha of Hamoisesh Teres L'Bezin, where there's no L'Yigas. And since there's no Leigah, so therefore there's no much Karish Shemitah Lashem, and so to over here, since he's not collecting, so there's no halacha of canceling that debt, and therefore after the 10 years, he could collect that loan. Now, according to this version, Rav Kahana, he was saying, Afanan Namatinin, instead of asking, now since it's the opposite, he was saying, and we actually have this halacha in our Mishnah. A Mishnah said, we evaluate how much a person would be willing to give you elbizus biyada, they should have 1,000 zuz in his hand. Bain litim mikamad lamayam, whether if he would have to give it back within 30 days, ubi litim mikamad as a shaman, whether he have to give it back within 10 years. Now, if you would say, not like Shmuel, that the Shemitah year does cancel it, kulanami bay shlumele, then they would have to pay back the whole thing. Obviously, you see that he doesn't have to pay, that the Eidim Zemim don't have to pay the entire value, because anyway the bar would have to pay it back, just a question within 30 days or 10 years, which is like Shmuel according to this version that says, yeah, he does have to pay it back. There's no Shemitah if it's a loan only for 10 years because there's no lo yigas. On that Amarava, he says, rejecting the Raya, Hachemayiskinah, no, what are we talking about in our Mishnah? Is B'mava Alamashkin, talking about when the loan was made with collateral, over Moses Choyz Lebezin, where he gives over his documents to the courts. Then now, like we learn in the Mishnah, Masechtas Shviyas, Hamava Alamashkin, if someone lends on collateral, by Moses Choyz Lebezin, and gives over his documents to the courts, Eimashmitin, that does not cancel the debts, and therefore there's no Raya. Could be that if it wasn't on the Mashkin or Moses Choyz Lebezin, then actually it would cancel, not like the second version of Shmuel, so there's no Raya. Another teaching from Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel. Says, if someone tells his friend, continue on this previous theme. So let's say he lends his friend money and he says, I'm lending you on the condition that the Shemitah does not cancel this debt. So halacha is shvis mishametis. Anyway, the Shemitah will cancel the debt once Shemitah comes. And that is the Gemara, lemak sever Shmuel. Is that to say the one who's teaching this halacha, who is Shmuel, that he holds, masna masha kasabaterhu? Yeah, the reason why, although he stipulated, I'm lending on the condition that the Shemitah does not cancel it, and still the Halacha Shmuel saying is that it does cancel it, is because he's stipulating opposing what's written in the Torah. Because the Torah says Shemitah will cancel a debt. And v'chol amasna mashakas b'Torah tnai batel, and that Shmuel holds that whoever stipulates against opposing what the Torah writes, so that stipulation is void. But on that, we learned that Shmuel holds that actually the stipulation is valid. Because we learned as follows. If someone tells his friend, I'm going to go through this business transaction with you on the stipulation that there's no halacha of aina. Aina is when there's price fraud, when there's a differential greater than a sixth of what the real price is, and there's the overcharge or undercharge of a sixth. So then the halacha is generally that then the sale is void. And that the person is stipulating, I'll go through with you on the condition that there is no halacha of aina. So the machlek is, Rav Aimer, he says, yesh lei lav aina. Doesn't make a difference that you stipulated. Torah says there is aina, and therefore there is going to be aina. Shmuel Aimer, ein lo yilav aina. Shmuel says, no, not going to be any aina. That's the stipulation. So you see, Shmuel holds, even though the person is being masna mashakas, but Torah is stipulating contrast in opposition to what the Torah writes, that there is aina, and he says, no, there's not going to be aina. Shmuel holds, there's not going to be aina. So you see, the person could stipulate against what the Torah writes. So why is Rabbi Yehuda saying in the name of Shmuel that Shemitah is going to cancel it? If he stipulated the Shemitah, should not cancel it. And that answers the Gemara, Hayit Malam. We actually said regarding this last halach of Shmuel, that Amar Vanan, he says, L'didim mefarsh le minei Shmuel, to me was explained from Shmuel, that it depends what the wording of the stipulation was. If he says, Amanas she'en l'cho olai oina, if he says, look, I'll go through this transaction with you on the condition that you don't have on me oina, I mean that I don't have to pay you for that price for it. So then Shmuel holds, yes, ein lo yolav oina, that then there's no halacha of oina, because, yeah, as the Gemara was proving, that Shmuel holds if someone stipulates in contrast to what's written in the Torah, his stipulation is valid. But if, let's say, he tells him, Amanas she'en boi oina, on the condition that there is no oina, that's not a valid stipulation that this one, it's not saying that he should be moichel da'ina. Rather, the wording of that stipulation is that there is no aina in this sale. Now, the thing is, we see that there is price for it. There is more than a sixth of a difference of the true price. And that, said Rav Anan, Dir Shmuel agrees, hare yesh ba aina. So there is aina. He was saying on the condition that there is no aina. But there is aina. There is more than a sixth price. So then it is going to void the sale. So therefore, says the Gemara, so hachi nami, here also, if the borrower says to him, lend me al menashe lo tishmiteni b'shviyas, lend me the money on the condition that the Shemitah year is not going to cancel the debt, so that's a stipulation, because although he's stipulating in contrast to what the Torah says that Shemitah should cancel, still his condition is going to be valid, and ein shviyas m'shem tasa, and the Shemitah is not going to cancel, because you could be masna mashakas b'Torah. But if he tells him, Amanas shloi tishmeteni shviyas, not bishviyas. So it's a condition that the Shemitah year is not going to be mishamet. But the laws of Shemitah are not given over to these two people to decide what is the law of Shemitah. Shemitah does cancel. So that's not a valid stipulation. And therefore, there shviyas misham tasai, there Shemitah is going to cancel. So if one looks closely at the words of the halacha of Yehudim and Shmuel, the words were, ho'im l'chaver amanas shloi tishmeteni shviyas. On the condition that Shemitah doesn't cancel, Shemitah does cancel. You don't decide the objective rules of the Torah. The objective rules between you and your friend. If you would say al menashe lo tishmiteni b'shviyas, that you're not going to be mishamet beyond the Shemitah, that could work. That's totally in mechila. That a person could be masna mashakas b'Torah, and therefore that resolves the teaching of Shmuel that yes, a person could be masna mashakas b'Torah, but not regarding what the Torah itself says. And there the halacha would be that the Shemitah would cancel the debt. Continuing on a related discussion regarding a loan, Tanu learned in the Braisa, Malves Chaver Stam. Someone lends his friend money unspecified. Oh, you need $100, here he gives it to him. So the halacha is, Eina Rishoy L'Tayve Pachas M'Lamad Yomis. Now I'll go back and to try to collect from him the money they lent him less than 30 days. So the Gemara tells us, Sava Rabbi Ochanah Kameid L'Rav L'Meimah. Rabbi Ochanah thought to say in front of Rav, that explaining this halacha, that hanamil b'milva b'shtar. This was only said regarding if the loan was done in a document. Delay of it inish the tarach, because the person is not going to go through the effort generally. The cost of shtar, but some less than yemitol. Write up a whole document that I owe you money if it's less than a period of 30 days. We could assume that he wanted a legitimate type of a loan, which would be at least for 30 days. But he thought to say, but if it was just an oral loan where he just gave him $100, he could come back tomorrow and say, give me back, please give me back my money. There wouldn't apply to the 30-day minimum. On that, Amlei Rav, and that Rav responded back to him. He says, Hacha Amar Chaviv, this is what my beloved, which actually the translation of the word Daidi, which means both my beloved and my uncle, because it's referring to Reb Chiya, who was his father's brother, his uncle, that this halacha is Echad HaMilva B'Shtar, whether the loan was in a document, Ve'Echad HaMilva Apeh, and whether if the loan was orally, even so, both of them apply to the 30-day minimum. Tanim Hacha is similar in the Braisa. Amar V'Shaver Stam, if someone lends his friend money unspecified, Ain Rishol the Tavit Pachas Mishleishim Yom, he's not allowed to go ahead and collect from him the money less than 30 days. Echad Amilav B'Shtar, Echad Amilav Peah. Whether it was an oral loan or a written loan, either way, it's at least 30 days. On that halacha, Amli Shmuel Rav Masna. Shmuel said to Rav Masna, Loi Teisiv Akarach. Don't sit down on your feet. Ad Mefarishlis Law Lahoshmait. Until he explained to me this teaching, Menoha Milsa the Amr Rabbanim. From where do we know this thing that the rabbis say? Hamava Hamavas Chaver Stam. If someone lends his friend money unspecified, he's not going to collect from him the money less than 30 days, then that is Echa Milva Bishtar, Echa Milva Peh, whether if it's a written loan or whether it's an oral loan. So Rav Masna responded to Shmuel, and he says, Dechsiv, says the Pasuk in Devarim. Says Karvish Nasa Shevesh Nasa Shemitah. It says that if the seventh year, the year of the Shemitah is going to get close, and you're going to be afraid to lend someone money, because, then the Shemitah year is going to cancel it, a person is not allowed to do that, he has to go ahead and lend the money anyway. Now, but one thing, the question is, Mimash Meshenemah, from the fact that the Pasuk says, Karvish Nasa Sheva, that the seventh year was coming near, so any Yedesh Yishnah Shemitah, don't I know already that that's the Shemitah year? That's the year that cancels all the debts? Why does it repeat it? What the redundancy, Shnasa Sheva, Shnasa Shemitah? So rather, what does the word Shnasa Shemitah come to teach? Laim Lecha comes to teach you the following halacha. Yesh Shemitah Acheres, there is another, so to speak, Shemitah, a cancellation of debts, Shehi Kazu, which is like this, the seventh year, which is called a year. Ve'ezui, what is something that's called a year, and that's going to cancel the debt for that amount of time? Zuhamal ve'eschaver istam, this refers to Allah, of someone who lends money unspecified. She'en yirashoy l'tayvi b'pochas mishleishimim, he's not going to collect that money less than 30 days, because the Amamara, like the Master said in a different context regarding the halachas of Arlor, Arla is the first 3 years of a fruit tree that the fruits are forbidden, that Shleishim Yim Bashana Chashab Shana, 30 days in the year is considered like a year, which is, let's say, planted at more than 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. So once it reaches Rosh Hashanah, it's going to be considered as a whole year past, considered as one of the 3 years of Arla. So we see that 30 days is like a year. So just like the seventh year is Shemitah, so the reason why I repeat Shnatza Shemitah is to say there is another thing that will be Meshamet, that will cancel, so to speak, at least temporarily, like the seventh year, that's also considered like a year. Because 30 days is like a year. And that's the 30 days of a loan where it's canceled, meaning that you can't collect during those 30 days, which is the halacha of Hamavas Chaver Bistam, that you can't be Teveya Pochas Melam again. Another related teaching, where Va'am Rav Yehuda Merav, that Rabbi Yehuda says, name of Rav, that HaPesech Beis Hatzav B'Shabbos, if someone makes an opening for a new garment. I mean, it makes an opening for a neck. There was a sheet, and it makes an opening where that becomes a garment where you could stick your head out. Chayiv chatzis, if someone does it on Shabbos, he's liable for karma chatzis because he did one lametes malachas of mesakin mana, which is from makam patash. He finished off an item, in this case, making a garment, by now making it into a garment, that now you could stick your head out from the top. Now, why the Gemara introduces this teaching over here is because, since we mentioned before Rabbi Yehuda before, that he spoke about the halacha of if someone lends his friend money for 10 years, and on that, as we said in the top of the Amud, Rav Kahana asked a question on him from our Mishnah, so now the Gemara introduces different teachings from Rabbi Yehuda, where then Rav Kahana asks on Rabbi Yehuda. So although they're unrelated halachas, but they're all in that context of Rabbi Yehuda and the questions of Rav Kahana, which continues from our discussion, which was introducing in the relationship of our sugya. So on this teaching of Rabbi Yehuda, Maskev l'Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana asked, why? Why is this a chi of chatas? V'chi ma bein zeh l'maguf haschavis? What's the difference between this about making an opening for a neckline, that you chayev chatas, between opening up the cover of a barrel, which the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos Kuf Memvav Med Aleph, that if someone chops off the top part of the barrel on Shabbos with a sword, so he's allowed to do that to open up the barrel. But why is it any different? Both of them are making an opening on the top for the item. So Amalei, Rav Yehuda said to him, they're different. Zeh, here by making the opening of the neckline in the garment, there it was chibur. It was all connected. It was one piece of cloth. So therefore, when you make an opening, that's making a whole new tikkun for the garment. That's a malacha of Shabbos of makom b'patash, of mesaken mana. But here, v'zeh, but by the cover of the barrel, even though it was cemented on, it was put on tightly on top of the top of the barrel, but that's ein rechiber. That's not a complete connection. So although it was glued on, but that's like it was really opened already, just sealed, and now you're reopening it again. That's not making a whole new thing that was never there before. Therefore, that's not going to be in the category of Masakat Mana, and that's why there was permitted. Whereas over here, by the base of Tzavar, there's going to be a Chiv Chatas on Shabbos.